It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, founder and co-owner of the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Hello, Jill. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for showing up. We always love it when you do. All right. Here we go. We'll just see what we get here. Sydney and Poughkeepsie. I'm suddenly taking care of a litter of feral kittens. I guess they're about 4 weeks old, and I'm bottle feeding them all. This morning, one of them has goopy eyes and goopy nose. It seems like it would be cruel to isolate her from the other kittens, but should I? Or keep them all separate from each other? Can I keep an eye on her for symptoms getting worse, or does she have to go to the vet now? I have hardly any money. This is a big deal for me. I just couldn't leave them there where I found them.
So this is actually a common issue, you know, finding kittens, single kittens or stray kittens that don't appear to have a mother. And what happens when they get this respiratory disease? There can be a few different diseases, but what happens is that it usually runs through the whole litter. But they can die very easily. So this is something that needs to have some medical attention. So the kittens, may need to be put on antibiotics. They certainly should have exams. So the problem of having no money, this is where the humane societies and the shelters are, this is one of the reasons why they get funding, is because they take on these animals that no one else can. Sydney could even be a foster parent, potentially, but still get help with veterinary care. I think you said Poughkeepsie, so the Dutchess County SPCA, Hudson Valley Humane Society, these...
So that would be the first call. I just remember up on...
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Tell them what you've got. Tell them that, they need veterinary care, that you don't have any money to do that. And then, and see where you can go from there.
You're happy to foster them. But then they will pretty much spring into action. You're just in terms
Meanwhile, keeping them really warm. Keep them really warm and low stress. So no handling by strangers.
Okay.
They should be eating a little bit of kitten food, stronger, stinky, smelling food, put it on a flat surface, mix it with a little kitten milk if you want to, but you could just mix it with a little warm water, make sure it's warm food. I usually just to introduce food is mush their faces in it, and they lick it off their lips, and they really like it. So you can gently wipe their noses and eyes with warm water on a cotton ball.
And is there anything just... While you're waiting for the medical attention, is there anything is supplementary? That's a different word. Is there anything else that you would put in natural for a kitten for a bunch of kittens who are potentially goopy?
Not necessarily.
Okay. All right.
No, I think just keeping them. If it's really dry and it's the wintertime, then you would do a humidifier in a small space. But otherwise, their noses get raw really easily, and when the nose is raw, they don't want to eat, so you have to be very careful about wiping the goobers. Dab at them.
And when do you stop bottle feeding?
Typically by three, I used to raise a lot of these kittens before I was a veterinarian, and so I would usually get them to eat solid kitten food between the ages of 3 and 4 weeks. Put it down in the cap of something, put a little bit of food, mush it up, warm water, and then you just mush their faces in it, and they make an absolute mess, and they have to have a bath after they eat, but it gets them eating and off the bottle.
Okay. So that's also helpful, because if you're bottle feeding and you have to keep them separate and the...
Yeah, so keeping them separate is not a good idea. Right. They're already exposed. Getting them to the vet right away and cleaning up the excessive secretions is a good idea.
Okay.
But you also have to help them. You may have to help them at this age urinate, too, which is a whole different thing, and you can find that online and on YouTube. But getting them some, calling today would be the best thing to do to the Humane Society or ASPCA.
Perfect. All right. Staying in New York State, apparently. Dave in Millbrook, I've heard that when your dog has diarrhea, the best thing to do is either stop feeding them or just give them broth. But I don't know how you're supposed to do that. how long you're supposed to do that for, and is broth better or just nothing but water? What happened to rice?
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated because it depends on the severity of the diarrhea. So some dogs will have a transient diarrhea because they ate something nasty. Many, many, many dogs will have a transient diarrhea because they ate something nasty, and the next day they'll be fine. So probably not a good idea to feed them anything if it's profuse amount of very loose stool, because every time you feed, there's going to be more of that stool. So it's okay to withhold food on an otherwise healthy dog. It's okay to withhold food for 12 hours until everything settles down, as long as they're drinking water and holding it down. So the vomiting diarrhea and just the diarrhea is kind of a different situation. So if they're just having diarrhea, go ahead and keep the water down. Make sure that they're drinking water and they're not too lethargic. You can offer, broth is not something that you need to do unless you have a really sick dog and it's been going on for a couple of days. So plain water's fine. If they won't drink the water, it's okay to do some non-sodium chicken broth. But if you have a dog who's having profuse diarrhea and won't drink water, they're sicker than you think and they need to go to the vet.
Right. And, in a funny way, having had a number of these, it's pretty easy to tell. Like you will know within a fairly short period of time if you just have someone who is let's say cycling through something really nasty, or if you have another problem. And it behooves one to just pay attention to that, because there's that moment where it's like, okay, you're just lying there and this isn't good. And
right,
the minute
yeah.
that you have that sensation, it's like, don't worry that you might be wrong. Just that you activate.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it can get out of hand. If they need veterinary care, the progression is often from diarrhea to then vomiting and not eating. And, you don't want to let that diarrhea go on a Friday morning. You know, they had diarrhea all night Thursday because you don't want to have to run to the emergency clinic on a Saturday. So, it's a good idea to get on top of it, right away, depending on their affect. You know, if they're lethargic, a young dog won't be lethargic even with diarrhea if it's a transient diarrhea. So if they're lethargic and really down and out, you should call. If you have bloody mucousy stool, you should call, because, and most people do, but it's not something to let go because it can become really profusely bloody even without one of the more serious diseases. And then, again, aside from very little control, so you have these bloody mucousy drops all over the house and
right.
kind of unpleasant for everyone.
And the only other thing that I would ask about that is, if you've got a reasonably healthy dog and you've got, you just have really bad, and you've got diarrhea, I know many people who still can't resist feeding them. And
yeah, so don't feed. I mean, there's that reflex. That reflects that if you eat, then the bowels will move. So probably, it's not a good idea to feed them. And if you want to have no stool passed for at least 10 hours before you feed a bland diet, which if you haven't got any gastrointestinal diet at home, some people keep those at home, then just feed, a very overcooked, mushy rice, white rice. We don't want fiber. White rice and boiled chicken pieces are fine.
Right. And
kale pectate, sorry to interrupt you. Kale pectate is fine too. If you've got a 3-year-old dog and it just ate something disgusting on the ground, and then he has diarrhea 4 hours later, you've got a dog who, as long as you're not suspecting it's something toxic, you can go ahead and give, a dose of kale pectate. You just sort of extrapolate or interpolate, I guess, from the size of a human. It's okay to do one dose. But if you're feeding bland diet and you did a dose of kale pectate and it's not helping, then you need to call.
Right. And this is also the moment to mention, please, that kale pectate is different from the other things that you can get over the counter.
Right. Pepto-Bismol has aspirin in it, so you have to be somewhat careful with that. It also makes the stool turn a blackish-greenish color, which is really scary to see. So I usually don't recommend that.
And I'm talking about the other diarrhea meds that you can buy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they do. I learned, and I've forgotten the names, of course, right now, unhelpfully. But you know what I'm talking about, because one is lower intestine, one is upper, I was told a long time ago.
Yeah. Diarrhea medications for people are not necessarily safe.
Okay.
Right? Because if you've got an overgrowth of bacteria that's producing a bacterial toxin, you don't want to slow down the gut.
Right.
Because you're going to have a sicker dog. So you have to be very careful with those medications.
So basically, for the sake of this program, Kaopectate's okay.
One dose of Kaopectate.
Right. Okay. And does it matter if my father was the worst at this? Oh, give him a pill. You just give him a Pepto-Bismol pill. But do you prefer it? Should it be the liquid, or does pill matter, or?
You can use a Pepto-Bismol pill. Really does anything. In my hands, I don't think it's really been helpful.
I wasn't going to go with that. I was thinking, but Kaopectate does make a pill. That's what I was wondering.
Oh, you could do the pills.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Just as someone who has spent a lot of time cleaning up, you know, after the dosing, that's really why I was asking.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Alicia in Long Island. So I know you can't make decisions for anybody about this, but can you tell me, when it comes to a cat with cancer, what is your decision process when it comes to opting for radiation or not? Big Boy is 14 years old and has liver cancer, and I love him, but I just don't know how to decide whether extending his life a year or so would be the right thing to do. It's expensive, and I don't even know if it will feel bad for him or make it better or worse.
That's a very difficult decision, and so it's a really good question because, you know, it certainly depends on your pet's personality about how difficult is it for them to go to a veterinary situation. You know, if you have a very relaxed guy and he takes everything in stride, then, you know, something you might consider more, because it does entail a lot of veterinary visits and follow-ups. If money weren't a part of it, you know, the questions you would ask to an oncologist is things like how many treatments and how frequently. So how often do I have to go to the vet, to this practice, to get treatments? And how are the treatments administered, and what does that entail? And really, how likely is it that my cat will be ill after treatment? So veterinary oncologists shoot for, you know, we're not shooting for a cure. We're shooting for prolonged, good quality life. And so, you know, still you can have some animals that are not going to do well with the treatment, and you can always stop it at that point. But you want to ask, how likely is my pet to be ill after treatment, and for how long? Is it just a day or two? Usually. And then what is the average life expectancy with treatment for this type and stage of cancer versus without treatment? And then you have to make your decision based on that. You know, if potentially you could treat, you know, for instance, for lymphoma, those dogs often do quite well in between treatments, and they have good life quality, and it can be extended for, a decent amount of time. With, you know, liver cancer of other types, you know, that might be completely different. So lots of good questions. I think if you're even on the fence about it and you could afford it, that it's worth the visit to the oncologist so that you can get a feel for whether this is something you want or not.
Right, and even if you can't afford the treatments, or right now money's an issue, and I've had this with, I've had life experience with this, so I'm falling back on that. It's worth discussing it with someone to find out what it would entail and what, if anything, can be done. You know, I don't think enough people ask for help sometimes. And there are programs in effect. There are ways if it's something that you want to do.
Right.
That's
right. And if you've got a cat, especially, who hates to travel in the car,
right,
for one thing, you really need to think twice about what you're going to
exactly
be looking at.
What I'm trying to say is it has everything to do with the individual. So it's a fair question to find out, because you know your individual best. And I'm actually, you know, discounting. If you've got someone who doesn't like to leave the house and it's going to mean like weekly trips or month, then you already know that you're dealing with something different. I'm talking about, you know, someone who's having a decent time and like, you know, just is up for stuff. And so you're moving on to the expense versus the, you know, that part of it. And that's why I'm seconding the, you know, at least spring for the oncologist visit so that you can find out what would be entailed and so forth.
And go prepared with all of your questions. Right. Don't expect to be told everything. Go prepare yourself with all of the questions that are important to you.
All right. Mohammed in Torrington, for an old dog with stiff legs and probably a little arthritis in her hips, is a firm bed or a soft bed better?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, ideally, in our minds, we'd like for them to sleep on a softer bed, but some dogs prefer not to. So I let them sleep where they prefer, because some dogs are too hot on a soft bed, and the heat bothers their joints. So arthritis comes in all different flavors, at least it does in Chinese medicine. And so some will be so deficient that, you know, the idea is they'll choose that more firm surface and they feel more comfortable on it. Most dogs with arthritis prefer a softer bed, as long as they're not too hot.
All right. So long short, it's up to the dog.
Up to the dog. Memory foam is wonderful if you've got a dog that's not too hot. You know, it's really nice and cushioning. The egg crate-like foam is good, too. But if they are too hot, we don't want to make them, you know, place on that bed and stay there, darn it, and pant all night kind of thing. They're not going to do that anyway. They won't stay.
Yeah.
So it's a personal choice.
Yeah, and I will also add that having dogs that, you know, have lived together for ages, it's not only personal, it's individual. Like, you just don't, some run hot, some run, they can live in the same house, do the same thing, eat the same thing, and, you know, some
be so different.
Yep. So there is one of those. All right, Jen in Copaic, after a bunch of internet research, surprise, surprise, I'm feeling confused about when is the best age to spay. My hubby and I have put down a deposit on a beautiful St. Bernard puppy, and we are trying to plan for her homecoming. Standard advice is 6 months, but there's plenty out there that contradicts that. What's your view on the pros and cons of doing it at 6 months?
There's a lot of confusing, information out there. But there is absolutely compelling evidence, good solid evidence, that waiting until at least 1 year of age, and maybe even up to 2 years of age, but at least 1 year and I prefer one estrus cycle, can prevent the early onset of osteoarthritis. So it's more important in a larger breed dog. So the bigger the dog, the more important it is to wait, in my opinion. And not just my opinion, what the evidence shows as well. You can prevent the early onset of osteoarthritis. You can be less likely to have certain cancers in certain breeds. And likely, I think, in the next few years, they're going to maybe find out about the prevalence of adrenal gland disease, which is too prevalent in dogs, and link it to the early spay problem. So, you know, the sex hormones are really important in development of the musculoskeletal, cardiovascular, the immune system even, and in their psychological development as well. And I think in there, just from my 31 years of experience, or 32 years, then it makes a difference in their confidence. So you can really affect that. Hip and elbow dysplasia, anterior cruciate ligament rupture, so common. We know that it can reduce the incidence of that because the ligaments are stronger. And certain cancers like lymphoma, mast cell tumor, osteosarcoma, which is a bone tumor. And then the small and the toy breeds tend to mature sexually at a younger age, so it's not quite as important. So I always tell people that they need to wait and see what their attitude is. So if you've got, you know, if it's difficult for you to wait with those little dogs because they're humping your leg or they're peeing all over the house or whatever, then, you know, you can come earlier, definitely. But the large and giant breeds, we want to wait on.
Right.
Maybe 6 to 18 months or so.
And that has
to 18.
That has totally changed since I now. How does that square with the used to be you couldn't even you couldn't adopt a dog without
it. Yeah, so that's really difficult. I mean, the AKC is on board with this, okay, with these recommendations. So I'm, you know, that's a great thing. But the problem is shelter animals, you know, the worst thing that they can do is adopt out a pet to somebody and not count on the fact that they're going to bring them back, and then they're out there and getting pregnant and producing more cats. And actually, it's not an issue with cats, but
dogs
producing puppies, you know. Yeah. So they are between a rock and a hard place, and this is why they're trying to get them spayed later, but they want them spayed by 6 months of age, and they will have you returned by 6 months of age. And they really are, they have a problem with your waiting any longer because you can't know what people are going to do.
No, that's very much an issue. And right. I was just curious because that was always a bar. Plus the fact that I have always had intact male dogs is sometimes a bar. But I do remember bringing the lovely Carly home, who, and we were waiting for her. She hadn't had her first heat yet or anything. And so we figured it was all good. And she was there for, oh gosh, at least 6 hours. You were on vacation. I looked down and was like, oh, great. So, you know, that can happen too.
Yeah, it can. And it's not, if you've got male dogs, intact male dogs, it's pretty unpleasant. So everybody has to consider what they can manage. But just so that I always want people to be educated before they make that decision.
Right. And that's...
And with the St. Bernard, it's a pretty darn important decision.
Plus, it looks like they don't have... At least in this question, Jen and her husband do not seem to have another creature to worry about, so...
Yeah, definitely want to wait past 6 months would be my recommendation. At least 1 year.
Okay. All right, last question, Nora in Germantown. Can a rabbit be allergic to hay? Our bunny loves his hay and pretty much lives in it, but we just got her a friend, and the newbie is sneezing a lot whenever she hangs out in the hay. She seems totally okay otherwise.
You know, I don't know that it would be a true allergy. I suppose you can be allergic to anything, really. The dust in the hay is probably the issue. So I guess with your new bunny, I would try to find some hay that's not so dusty. And it really is a huge difference, I know from having horses, a huge difference in the dust content of hay. And so that's what you'll need to do is find some, see if you can find some more expensive hay that doesn't have so much dust in it, and that may be helpful.
All right. As ever, you have aced it. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.